Welcome to Unfuck Your Brain. I'm your host, Cara Lowenthal, Master Certified Coach and founder of the School of New Feminist Thought. I'm here to help you turn down your anxiety, turn up your confidence, and create a life on your own terms, one that you're truly excited to live. Let's go. Hello, my friends. I'm so happy to share this bonus episode with you today because it is a conversation with one of my favorite people, a good friend of mine, Lily Womble, who is the founder and creator of Date Brazen, which is a feminist dating coaching program and movement that I wish I'd had when I was dating. And her new book, Thank You More Please, comes out today. And I think you're going to really enjoy this conversation. And I want to encourage you to go order her book because we need to show the dating industries and all of the apps and all of the kind of heteronormative, patriarchal conditioning and we get and the businesses out there that are contributing to that conditioning and making money off of it, that there's a market for smart, respectful, authentic, feminist dating advice. And the truth is, dating isn't something that comes supernaturally to a lot of people. It can be hard and complicated. And there is a way to kind of grow and evolve yourself without compromising your values or your principles and find that partnership that you want. And Lily herself is such an embodiment of thank you more please, just as an attitude and an energy, that she is just like such a lovely breath of fresh air and joy and the best hype and wing woman a person could ever have. And so I'm just so thrilled for her book coming out. Having just gone through this, I know what a process that is. And I really, really want her book to be a success as well. So if you are dating, you're going to want to go order a copy of this book. It's anywhere books are sold is where you can find it. And if you think you're going to want it, order it this week, please, because the first week of sales are the most important for a new book. And if you are happily married or partnered, I honestly recommend reading it anyway. As you know from my work, like romantic socialization shows up in your relationships also. And the same way you thought during dating is the same way you'll think in your relationship. Or you'll have it on hand to give to a good friend when they are finally at their dating rock bottom and ready to accept some coaching help. So I'm going to stop gushing now and let you all listen to this conversation that really digs into how we are socialized around dating and the power of that sort of positive thank you more please approach. This is actually one of the techniques that I used when I was changing my thoughts on dating, that sort of gratitude for what I'm being shown and asking for more. And it was really helpful for me. So I can't wait for you all to hear it. Hello, my friends. I am here with one of my favorite people to commiserate and laugh with, especially because we both have books coming out around the same time. And so we have just been like, someday maybe we'll do the unfiltered behind the scenes of having a book and having it come out. That would have to be like a ticket, private, no recording only experience.
No phones, put them away.
No phones, put phones in those little Kevlar bags. I am here with Lily Womble, who is an amazing feminist dating coach, and I'm going to have her give her, you know, I like to make women brag about themselves, but I will say I met Lily at actually a book party for Farnoosh Torabi, my other friend, and our mutual friend Hillary, who's now my sales and marketing director, introduced us, and Lily was wearing this like fabulous off-the-shoulder pink dress. I don't even know how to describe it. I just was like, this whole thing, whatever's happening here, this is great. I like you. Let's be friends. Like, I don't know what's going on here, but I'm into this. The only time I've ever felt like the quiet person in the group was hanging out with Lily and Hillary. That, like, Lily, Hillary, and me is the only scenario in which I am the wallflower. So that's just a fun experience for me in general. So, Lily, tell us who you are and what you do. Why are you here? Why are you on my podcast?
Why am I here? Because you liked my dress. That's why I'm here.
Because I like your dress. That's right. That's how you make
it. It was very breast tit forward.
Yes, it was a tits-forward dress, which I appreciate as somebody who is essentially always tits-forward despite my best efforts.
And I mean,
I'm not always trying to not be, but there's no way to not be.
No way. Why would I hide my light? You know what I'm saying? I need to be.
That's right. Don't hide your light under a bushel or a bra. That's what I always
say. Absolutely. So I'm here because, as you mentioned, I'm a feminist dating coach. I'm Lily Womble. I am a professional feminist dating coach. I was a top matchmaker at one of the nation's largest firms. I was like the third most successful brat.
I didn't know that about you.
There we go. Yeah. Yes. So I was matchmaking up a storm, and I didn't have any intention of being a matchmaker. It was like 8 years ago, but I saw a job posting. I needed another job, as you do living in New York City. Did you know I was also at the same time as applying for this job, a balloon hat maker at Senor Frogs in Times Square?
You know, I'm now realizing that we really didn't do the deep dive on childhood that we needed
childhood,
to.
This
really
was my 20s.
I only recently learned you were like a child voiceover actress. Yes. So there's just been a lot.
Oh, it's a winding road. It's a winding road. But no, I mean, I needed a second job. I was trying to be in musical theater. Who am I kidding? Like a fourth job. I got the job as a matchmaker. I realized, you know, my roots were in feminist advocacy and nonprofit work. And so that's what my first beat of my career was. So I realized in starting to be a matchmaker that A, I was really good at it. B, it was a place where I could help women be well. Like when I helped people with their dating lives specifically and helped them step into their agency, it was a deeper portal to well-being, I found. So I got really passionate about the dating space, particularly because it also felt like culturally single women who were dating were sort of this like left behind group of people who were treated as behind, treated as less than, treated as if they were idiots for not having found a relationship yet. And I got really passionate about being with them in the dating trenches and helping them thrive and helping them take up more space. While I was matchmaking, I was also in the worst romantic relationship that I could have imagined for myself. I was settling every single day. I was giving this advice professionally, like, you deserve more. Let's get you out on some great dates. And then I'd be crying on his bathroom floor, like 15 minutes later, silently, very, very painful. He was somebody who met all of my checklist items. I thought that it was going to be this like, oh, somebody likes me. They really liked me. You know, I had this deeper narrative that I'm too much. My mother literally told me at age 12, you're too much and you will have a hard time finding a husband. And so this like, this proof of you're not too much was this person who wanted to date me, but it ended up being like a fiery hellscape of a relationship. So when I was done being out of alignment and when my therapist really helped me sort of understand the cognitive dissonance that I was living within and I realized that I was done taking his shit, I broke it off with him. But then I was like, what do I do now? How do I never settle again? Because my therapist hasn't dated in 30 years. My friends and family just tell me to get on another dating app and to play the numbers game. And matchmaking is a first date solution. And I know I need something much deeper than a first date. So about 6 years ago, I started building the solution that I needed for myself. I started learning about coaching. I started immersing myself. I was mentored by a few incredibly highly skilled coaches at the time. I was then practicing these new coaching skills that I developed with my matchmaking clients, getting like real-time experience helping people uncover their own internalized stories as I did the same for myself. And what I found with like the tools of self-compassion and getting beneath the surface of my old dusty, crusty stories and neural pathways is that I created a plan, both mindset-wise and tactically, to thrive in my dating life, to have fun in my dating life, to start setting more boundaries in my dating life. And that led to more freedom. That led to me feeling flirty and giving my number to cute strangers and going on fun dates and fucking around more and feeling like confident in doing that. And that eventually led me to meeting the love of my life, Chris, who I'm now married to, who is not somebody who I necessarily would have like chosen had I not gotten beneath the surface of my old checklist. So when I was coaching my matchmaking clients with these tools, they started to find better dates for themselves than I or anybody else could find for them. And so 6 years ago, 7 years ago, I broke up with matchmaking and started Date Brazen to be the feminist badass coach that I had become and to start coaching people on becoming their own expert matchmaker.
I love that story because it's so often like we just want someone to give us a solution. So it's like with matchmaking, it's like if you have the belief that like somehow you can't find the good people, so you need to like pay someone who somehow knows them, who can like figure it out for you, right? Is like such a way that I feel like women and men probably go to matchmakers for very different reasons and like with different thought patterns. So I love that sort of like, oh, once you're empowered, this is like, I'm always saying to my clients, like, I don't know what you should do. You're going to know once you clean up your thinking, then you're going to know what to do. You know your life much better than me.
Yeah, I really.
So yeah. You have.
No,
oh, sorry,
outsourcing your agency is what it is. I mean, like, some yes. people, like, matchmaking yes. works great. Good for you. I'm talking about the people who have this feeling like, I know I could be more powerful. I know I could be more confident. I know I could be, but something's stopping me, right? So, like, really owning your agency and taking steps to create your own best solution is what I help my clients do every single day with a bunch of, like, bossy tactical dating strategy as right. well, rooted in feminist values.
Yeah, of course, there's always some tactics, but I think that whole, like, believing you have to change the circumstance, like, I need someone else to bring dates to me, or I need to move, or I need to, like, I need to look different or be different, or, you know, that there's, like, this gatekeeping happening. So you have a new book coming out called Thank You More, Please, A Feminist Guide to Breaking Dumb Dating Rules and Finding Love. And so, obviously, you're just singing my song. So can you talk a little bit about how you see patriarchal traditions have conditioned people, especially women and femmes, to settle for what you call crumbs in their dating lives? Like, how do you know if you're settling for a crumb, and why does the way we're socialized make us do that?
There are so many ways to answer that question. I was trying to think of the phrase, like, how could it not have impacted every single inch of our choices in every single way? However, just to focus on dating specifically, the way that I was just taking it personally, the way that I was raised in Birmingham, Alabama, to see that single women were literally treated as behind, childlike, leperish, how married women...
You're a child leper and you're also behind. Yeah, right.
Like, one of my clients put it so beautifully. She was in her mid-30s and she was like, I was treated as if I were pathetic for wanting a relationship and also pathetic for not having one. And so this double bind of, like, if you want something, you're desperate. If you don't have something, you're pathetic. I think that double bind is rooted in patriarchal, like, expectations of women and femmes to be partnered to signal value in our society, right? And top level down, that makes a lot of sense. Historically, that makes a lot of sense. It wasn't until, I mean, I know that you talk about this literally all the time, but it wasn't until historically, very recently, that women didn't have to settle in order to thrive or survive economically. So I think that in terms of why people, specifically people in their 30s or 40s who might feel, like, behind in their dating lives, why they might feel a little cuckoo or a little bit, like,
frantic is the frantic, word I like to use. I feel like people
frantic is because of the patriarchal expectation that you should have figured this out by now. And by the way, there's something wrong with you for not having figured out how to catch a person already. And so what I get to do is help people give themselves radical permission to own what they want, because another way that the patriarchy has seeped into our dating lives is that most women and femmes are shrinking what they want in response to stimuli like somebody who is wrong for you. They're centering their exes in whether or not they believe what they want is possible. I think, again, for people who date men, centering men who were wrong for you in whether or not you believe that what you want is possible, right? All of these things need and deserve to be untangled if you want to attract the best relationship of your life and feel amazing about yourself while doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such an interesting point, because people do this all the time with business or anything else. It's like you're defining what you think is possible based. It's like, I want something different, but also I don't believe it's possible because I haven't had it yet.
100%.
Right. It's like you broke up with somebody because they weren't what you wanted, but then you're telling yourself what you left is already only what exists. It's like the brain is so resistant to believing that something better is possible. And of course, like, society tells women there's a scarcity, especially if you're heterosexual or, I guess, you know, bisexual, but dating men, like, there aren't enough good men. There's a scarcity. You have to settle down. If you find someone who's not, like, a total deadbeat loser, then just make do, right? And maybe even if they are a total deadbeat loser, you should probably make do anyway, because, like, all of that scarcity gets so ingrained. This is sort of tangent. What your take is on dating apps? Because I'm seeing this, like, people obviously have a lot of thoughts and feelings about dating apps. I've certainly experienced, like, some of the terrible parts of them, but I also met my fiance on one. And I'm seeing this sort of, like, feminist backlash to dating apps, where they're sort of, like, compared to, like, diet culture, kind of. Like, these are companies that are profiting off of your, like, desperation and your, you know, self-esteem issues, and they are abusive, and they're, it's like a, there's just this new take that I think is kind of bubbling up. I'm curious, like, what your thought. Do you encourage your clients to use dating apps, to not use apps? What do you think about apps? Like, what's your take?
Yeah, I have several chapters devoted to this in my book. Thank you more, please.
Okay.
Literally,
you probably can't write a new like dating book these days without addressing.
No,
dating apps.
And they have fundamentally changed the landscape in the last 11 years. So of course we have to talk about them as it relates to how we find love and connection, especially because the perception is that they're ubiquitous, that you can't find love without one these days, that in-person dating is dead, right? All of these, I think, fallacies that we're under the impression that dating apps are the only answer because of these multi-million, potentially billion-dollar marketing budgets that dating apps have, you know, utilized over the last 11 years. So of course your brain believes that dating apps are the only solution. I also think we got to look at how they were this thing that you're describing as the new take. I have been talking about this shit for 6 years because dating apps have always been in the business of addicting their users. Because they were built like slot machines designed to keep people, I liken it to sitting in an Atlantic City casino with a big Slurpee with a gallon bag full of quarters, just putting quarters in the slot machine and trying to hit triple cherry. Like, it's an addictive thing, dating apps. And that's why I think that it's important to take the power back from them. First with your thoughts and then obviously with your actions, like really unhooking from the belief that a match or a message means anything about you or your future potential in your love life. It's just literally a tool. And I think it can be a really powerful fucking tool when you use it with boundaries, with intention, with self-knowledge. I think that dating apps are good for two things: meeting somebody outside of your social circle and getting to know your dating personality. Like, what are your triggers? What is exciting to you? What turns you totally off? How are you being courageous in the questions you're asking? How are you not? How can you be more direct in your communication? Like, this can be a playground for more courageous action and for attracting amazing people. I have so many clients who meet their partner, spouses on dating apps. And because we focus, there's another chapter of my book called Dating in Person with Main Character Energy, because I think that you got to have both. If you're going to have a fulfilling, joyful as fuck dating life that is more likely to lead to the best relationship of your life, I really think you've got to create an in-person dating life so that your online dating life becomes more unbothered.
I think you definitely think of them as like a tool. It's like a hammer, right? You could like kill someone with it or build a house. It's like your money or anything else is a tool like that. So for me, for instance, as somebody who just loathes talking to strangers in public and hates bars and doesn't really like socializing in groups, like all of these, for me, they were just a very useful tool. I was like, this is like so much less energy expenditure for me to like make initial connections this way. But I think of it as like also, or social media. It's like, you can use social media, your phone, to like numb out or like beat yourself up about how you look on Instagram, all these things. Or you can use it to like FaceTime your grandma, who you otherwise wouldn't get to see before she passed away. It's like a powerful tool that can either, depending on how you're thinking about it and how you're using it. I don't want anyone to give any particular tool or circumstance like all of the power over, right, their lives. I mean, as somebody who worked in like all women nonprofits for my whole life, it was like, I'm not meeting anyone at work.
Uh-huh.
This is not... Yeah. I'm in a world that's very one.
Yeah. And I do think, you know, I just contributed to this Washington Post article about how people are going to speed dating events instead of doing dating apps now. Like, there is a renewed conversation, especially after the 4 years that we've all had on in-person dating. We're coming back around to like, we got to renew our social skills. Like, I think that a lot of social skills have been lost.
How do we interact again?
How would I say hello to someone, you know? And I do think it's a both and with in-person dating and dating apps. I also say to my clients, like, they are optional when you have a really strong in-person plan and when you have the skills to confidently or awkwardly approach somebody and say hello, you know?
Or even notice when you're like, when I started doing this work, I realized that probably I had actually been hit on quite a lot in the past, but I didn't recognize it was happening because my thought was that I don't get hit on in public or like people don't hit on me. So of course I was like not even recognizing when someone was hitting on me. So, I mean, there's another reason why the mindset work is so crucial. It's like you can go change your circumstances, but if you haven't done the mindset work, you're going to be replicate. You can move to a new city and just not notice when anyone there hits on you either. Like, that's not going to solve your problem. You have to change the way you think. let's talk about, how do you define dating as a feminist? Like, obviously a lot of dating advice has been like very anti-feminist in the past, I would say, right? And even now I see, you know, there's like dating coaches out there where it's sort of like, get married in 6 months, like, or whatever. And I've always found, like, in my own coaching women on dating, there's this like balancing act of like, yes, I want dating to be more enjoyable for you. Yes, I know you really want to find a partner. You're really fixated on this specific outcome, right? The outcome I want for you is that like your relationship with yourself is changing, right? So there's this sort of like, it's both your relationship with yourself, and then you are also trying to make a particular return or result happen. So I'm just curious how you think of, what does dating as a feminist mean to you, and how do you try to bring that into
your life? Yeah, I think that being a feminist and striving to be intersectional in my feminism hopefully impacts everything that I do as a coach and business owner. But I think, you know, it starts with not defining romantic relationship as the gold standard of human existence. You know, like, as a dating coach, that feels pretty radical, you know, like,
that's the biggest part of it, is like, it's, you can't not be frantic, yeah, right? If you believe,
yes,
this is the thing that defines my worth and value in the world, and I don't,
yes,
have it.
And I'm a married person. I got married last year, and my husband is the most incredible person. I love him so much. Both, and if we were to get divorced at any point, like, we've discussed this openly, like, I would trust myself. And I think that that's also what I want my clients to have, is that they also, when they meet somebody, there's this franticness of like, well, what if this isn't the right person? What if this doesn't work out? And my whole thing is like, how can we zero in on your self-trust so hard? How can you have your back so hard that no matter what happens in your love life, you're going to be fine, you know?
Right, because like, they're thinking of it as, if there's a breakup, if there's a divorce, if there's a whatever, then I made the wrong choice. It doesn't matter.
I'm,
it's
a,
like,
failure.
Married for 30 yep. years.
Yep.
And like, then I made the wrong choice. I did it
and
wrong.
And I also think dating as a feminist means having the skills to own what you want and to be able to fundamentally verbalize what you want without apology. I think that that's also in a dating space that teaches women and people socialize as women to shrink, to want less, to stop being so much, to stop having so many needs or so inconvenient that you are so emotional, whatever, like, to boldly, in the face of those patriarchal expectations, to coach people on how to really revolutionize how they take up space in this world and how they ask for what they want directly leads to them finding the best fucking relationships of their lives. I do think fundamentally, like, this is about a relationship with self first. I think that that comes with any, I think, aligned coaching practice that I've found. I want to work on what I can control, which is my relationship with myself. Both, and when you create a relationship with yourself where you're constantly giving yourself permission to want what you want and give yourself permission to ask for it, even when you feel awkward, even when it doesn't please somebody, you know, to release that people pleasing, or as you call, people deceiving, really speeds up your trajectory towards the best relationship, instead of doing what you've been doing for the last 15 years, settling, being in relationships that you know aren't working, being in situationships, or hiding from your desire and not dating at all.
Doing the work to uncover why you want what you want. Because I think sometimes people hear like, have a list of what you want, and like, don't be afraid to say that. And they're like, great, needs to be a doctor and 6 feet tall and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, those things have nothing to do with whether or not you're in a good relationship, right? So like, I struggle sometimes with like not talking about it, but just like with settling discourse, because it feels like this term that is sometimes used really appropriately in my view, which is like, you're in a relationship where the person doesn't treat you the way you'd want a person to treat you. Like, you've done your own work and you're not being, person is not respectful or kind or doesn't even care about you or whatever, right? Like, so there's certainly a lot of scarcity messaging leads to women believing it's better. Like, sort of settling to me is being in a relationship because your thought is, it's better to be in any relationship than no relationship, or, you know, I can't find what I really want, or whatever, I'm not good enough. So that is settling. Then at the same time, I think sometimes I see this, especially in like some of my younger clients or students or like family members, whoever, who I feel like came up more in the Instagram era. There's like certain expectations of what a relationship should look like, or of like, if your partner is really good at like asking you about your day and caring about your family and doing the little things, but they don't do grand romantic gestures, and you're like, Well, my list is that somebody will take me on a like hot air balloon ride over Turkey and propose in the air. I saw that on Instagram. That's really romantic. It's like, that's not settling, right? So this sort of like, you know, you and I both, I think it's not, what's the right word? It's not a coincidence that you and I both have done a lot of work in this area, teach about this, and both ended up with people, having done that work, ended up with people who were like, not what the original checklist would have been.
I find that that's more often the case than not, that the person you end up with is not on paper who you would have thought you ended up with.
Because when you haven't done the work, your paper is the person who you think would allow you to think, I'm good enough, look what I got, right? It's like, we understand, I think feminists are very aware that men are taught to objectify women and to value them only for like how they look, and to, you know, believe that being with a woman who looks a certain way makes them a manly enough man or a high status man or whatever. We're very tuned into that dynamic. But I don't know that we are always taking as much responsibility for the flip dynamic of like, my status as a woman is not only being partnered, but being partnered with a man who meets certain socially conventional criteria of how he looks, what his size is, what his height is, what his job is he the earner, is he the provider? Like, the number of like women like me who are like high powered, making a lot of money, doing all the things, women who I coach who are like considering breaking up with some great guy who loves them, who they love, because like, he's not ambitious enough, or shouldn't he also be making enough money or whatever? And like, there's nothing wrong with wanting, if that's what you want, great. You both want, if you want to marry another captain of industry and like have you both fly around the globe all the time, that's fine. I'm not saying there's any way a relationship should be. I think sometimes feminists skip the step where you have to decondition all your beliefs about masculinity and about that version of value and status that society has taught you. It's not feminist coaching if you're like, I know my value, so here's my conventionally specified list of what a man needs to be, and I should get that kind of man. And like, that's me knowing my value. You've skipped half.
Absolutely. And also with this deconstruction comes deconstruction of sexuality. Like, that deconstruction is how I finally realized that I was bi, and like how I finally was like, oh, these things make sense. Why I, you know, was attracted to women right. at a certain age. Like, what? Oh, I make more sense. People are going to make so much more sense to themselves when they start that deconstruction of the expectations that were placed on you that you inherited from your mom, from your brother, from your coworker, like whatever it is. That chapter in my book that I think is my favorite is about essence-based preferences, which is my answer to this problem, because people do come in with either an over-functioning list, over-functioning meaning rigid checklist, you shall not pass energy, or an under-functioning blob of nothing, somebody nice with a job.
Right. Or not that nice, or maybe only sometimes.
Right. Has some money sometimes. Yeah. We go out to dinner sometimes. No. But like, how to come in the middle of those two things, not over-function, not under-function, is to come to, how do you want to feel in the right relationship? And getting really granular with your language to describe how you want to feel in the right relationship. In my view, there are two categories of preferences. There's like logistics, like the resume stuff, age range, height, whatever. And there's the personality traits, values. And so with an essence-based preferences lens, this is me putting on my glasses, with EBP lens, with like height range, for example. When somebody comes in, there's like, they're like, I want somebody 6 feet or taller, and I won't date anybody under 6 feet tall. I say, okay, cool. You get to want what you want, both. And how do you want somebody who is 6 feet or taller to make you feel? How does that feel and to be in their presence? And they generally say, I feel attracted. I feel enveloped. I feel, now here's the kicker, I feel smaller than them.
Of course, always. Yes. I mean, there's a whole thing about dating tall men and that baked in like
body image, the body stuff that I'm like, okay, so here's the work we're going to do, you know, to like another reason I'm a feminist dating coach, like we got to be thoughtful about this stuff so that you can feel freer in your dating life and in your life in general. So then we get to the essence of, you know, once we unpack and separate out what is patriarchal bullshit of you thinking that you're too big versus how you want to feel with the right person. And then I ask inevitably, have you ever felt attracted to, or have you ever felt enveloped in warmth by someone who is less than 6 feet tall. And inevitably they say, yes, I have. And so then I say, cool, you get to want what you want, both with this essence-based approach of knowing how you want to feel. You can be open to being surprised by the right person, because you're going to tune in after the date with, how did I feel? Did I feel the way I want to feel? And you use the same tool for like personality traits and values as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. Some of you listening may be like, wait a minute, Cara's always telling us we create our feelings. So we partially may just have different approaches. But for me, I think we can think about feelings in this slightly broader sense here, which is like, if you feel attractive because a man's a certain height, it's because your thought is, oh, I feel small next to him, right? And then you feel a certain way. I don't believe he's causing it, although, of course, you know, you have your own framework. But like, if I think about my relationship with my partner, I think part of what would have fucked me up, part of what would have kept me from being in this relationship previously, is that women are sold this belief that when you just find the right guy, you're going to feel amazing, right? And for a lot of us, that's not true, because a lot of shit comes up, right? If you have been like emotionally unavailable and then you have started doing this work on yourself, and you know, it's not like I had finished the work and then I met him.
No.
It's like ongoing.
Shani Silver says, and like, then a relationship isn't a prize for healing. I love that. Yeah.
Right. Right. Totally. Yes. Yeah. So I think there's like this, for me, it was like, it wasn't even like, how do I feel moment to moment, sort of, because moment to moment, I'm like confused, angry, scared. I'm like all, you know, these are like, I'm having all these feelings along with the good ones. That wouldn't have worked as a guide for me. But for me, it was like, what are my values in dating? Which is like a version of kind of how do I want to feel? But it was sort of like, what is, it's not about what status do they confer on me, or it's not about kind of, I met the right person and now I magically feel good about myself all the time, or I'm like magically blissfully happy all the time. For me, that's maybe the right way to say this, is like what I teach people as that middle way is, you know, maybe I talk about it differently, is these values, but it's the same thing. Rather than it being under inclusive of like, well, I hate myself and you're willing to date me and I don't think anyone else would, so I'm in, right? Or over inclusive of like, yeah, but you know, you're 5'8", so forget it, right? Rather than like this over checklist or this under checklist, it's like, okay, if you are not doing this based on what society's taught you, how do you navigate? What are your values? So for me, it was like my dating values were like curiosity, fun, and I think openness or growth, which fun is sort of a feeling, but it's like these are sort of qualities of this connection. So maybe that's a way to talk about it, right? It's like how you feel with the person, or like, what are the qualities of the connection? Are you both in this kind of space, right? And that can coexist even with, I never want anyone listening to me or anyone else talk about dating to think that it's like, you feel amazing and that's how you know they're the right one, because you always feel good. Because like, that was just not my experience at all. And it doesn't get talked about enough. Like, I feel like a lot of what we leave out in coaching, not you at all, just like in the coaching world in general, like in all of our, like, we can coach you to help you create this result you want, which is really true and powerful, is like, if that's been your kind of most fucked up issue your whole life, getting it will actually probably feel terrible.
I agree.
I've seen this happen with like people who make a million in their business the first time, where money was their most fucked up issue. That's how I felt finding like the perfect partner for me. It's like, it's sometimes not going to feel good, but I think that's so powerful, because so much of the time we're dating to feel better about ourselves.
Yeah.
And so if you're not going to feel amazing, is it still worth doing and why? And that, I think, helps you make much better choices.
Absolutely. And that's why I am very passionate about working with my clients now on how they care for their nervous system now, how they work on their thoughts now, how they create self-trust now. Because I tell them, like, one of the most activating things that you will experience is finding the best relationship of your life. It's going to bring up all of your shit.
Okay, yeah.
And so it's important to, I use the phrase like, have your own back now, so that you can trust yourself in that relationship, even when you feel anxious, or even when you feel like really caring for yourself through that. And I would say that our approaches are more similar than dissimilar. You know, the personality traits and values piece of the essence-based preferences framework are about identifying like the root words to describe how that person shows up in the world, like compassionately curious or joyfully nerdy. You know, these are things that that a lot of my clients come to, and then they have a succinct, clear language to describe what they're looking for in their terms, instead of just saying kind, funny, smart, which is very vague and unhelpful.
Or like, tall and successful.
100%. Right. So, and when I say, how do you feel in their presence? I think back to my first date with Chris and how his energy and how his showing up, how he showed up as a human triggered something like subconsciously for me that like, I felt safe in his presence and I felt that he would be a soft place to land. And that was very new for me. And so when I say like that, that's what I mean by that. But
yeah, and everybody has, there's something pheromonal or energetic that's like part of this, obviously. I mean, I definitely felt with my partner that there was just a ease to the conversation and a like, you know, there was a certain, of course, energy there. So I think I'm more just, I'm always kind of, I guess, scanning for and trying to correct how I think other like people in the midst of this journey are thinking, which is often like, well, once it happens, I'm going to feel so good, right? It's like you, I mean, and you are talking about exactly this. It's like people think that they can like hate the dating process, hate the process into a happy relationship.
Yes, like the get right? out of Which jail free like, card. Like I'm going to be in right, prison. It's like
I'm
until...
just going to drag myself through this until, right. But it's like the destination is going to feel like the journey. So if you, right. And I, so I love that what you're saying about like you teach that sort of that journey is going to be activating. And once you get there, you just have to learn a whole new thing, which is how to be in an adult intimate partnership, which is not the same as the dating skill.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you're thinking about this as like, then I get there and I can like, I'm done. It's like, no, ma'am. That's just the next.
No, then they say something like, you know, your new partner says something and you're like, whoa, you're a human being who has thoughts and feelings and work of your own to do. Oh, you're complicated. And like, oh, we have to figure out how to like, talk about money and like all the, you know, like there's another life chapter to do then, you know? And then in terms of people who are like super highly successful, around money is a really interesting piece, especially for highly successful feminist humans, for like, oh, I want them to bring the same amount to the table, or I want them to bring the same kind of ambition to the table. I would be curious for those people how they want someone to mirror their own success, to believe their own success.
Yeah. Or I would like, right. Why do you want that? I think women have really been taught that that's what makes it like, I mean, we are socialized to see dating so much as a indication and reflector of social status. Right. And so what women are socialized to see as social status in men is that they are ambitious and successful and make money. And so I've had like my teacher and friend, Brooke Castillo, we talk about this on the podcast. I went on her podcast to talk about my book, and we talked about this experience that she had when she started dating her current boyfriend, where she texted me and was like, but like, how do you deal with the fact that like your partner doesn't make as much money as you? And I was like, I literally don't ever think about that or care. And she was just like, that could just be like, fine.
Yeah.
You could just not care about that.
Correct.
That could just not bother you at all.
Correct.
And that was like mind blowing to her. But I do think that's what I like, that circles back to what we were talking about, which is like, to me, feminist dating is not just, it is 100%. And yes, first deconditioning the way you've been taught to think about yourself in the dating experience and like dating quote unquote market or whatever, but also how have you been taught to think about whoever you're dating? Like, you know, I think the gender socialization of like a heteronormative society hits stronger on how men and women are socialized, but whatever it is, like, how are you wanting? I see this in my mind all the time. I have to work on this. Like, especially if you have told yourself your whole life, there's something wrong with you because you're not in the right kind of relationship or the normal relationship or the whatever, right? As soon as you get in a relationship, your brain is just like, your brain's not like, oh good, that danger's gone. Your brain is like, now I got to scan all the time to make sure that he's like representing me well and reflecting on me well. And like,
well, or the so all child of I'm an adult child of divorce. Is what I call myself. I don't know. My parents got divorced like 7 years ago.
You're a child of an adult divorce.
I'm a child of an adult divorce. Thank you, Cara. Yes. Being extra clear. And, you know, my parents did not get along for a lot of my growing up. And it was a very difficult, you know, like tense place to be in our house. A lot of times it wasn't abusive. It was just like difficult. And so the scanning for, as a married person now, like the scanning for, is this okay? Are we okay? Is everything okay? I think that my work continues. And that's what and all of our work continues, you know,
but there is a big important shift that I feel like people don't talk about enough between what it's like to be like, oh, I'm dating someone. And then at least for some of us, what it's like to be like, this person's now a member of my family. I think it kicks up a whole different set of stuff. It's like people who have gone through having childbirth being like, nobody warns you about some of this stuff. It's like, I feel like nobody talks about the fact that there's one set of conditioning and dating trauma you may have around dating. But then once you get into a serious enough relationship and a person becomes like a family member to you, is like a whole other set of stuff that comes up. And those things are related. Often, I think we've been emotionally avoidant or unavailable in dating because we have unresolved family stuff. And like once someone gets close enough to that, once you are like living with someone and they become your family, as like a whole new package. So basically what we're saying is your brain's looking to be a lot for the rest of your life. But the good news is, you don't have to find a partner so you can be happy ever after, because your brain is going to be a lot no matter what.
I mean, check your own if-then thinking, y'all. Check it and then, you know, choose something different, you know? Like, it might be possible that my life is fulfilling now and I get to want a relationship. I think that another piece of, like, feminist dating that I don't hear people talking about often is this idea of like, as a feminist, you should know that you don't need a relationship. And if you, I shouldn't even want a partner because I should be so solid on my own, when that's such either or thinking that like it's saying basically like desiring something new in your life.
Wait, you wouldn't say like, I shouldn't have friends because I should be on my own.
100%. So treating your desires as if unpacking like what's going into your desires, what assumptions do you have about yourself and your desires, but then giving yourself fucking permission to want what you want can mean a beautifully freeing both end of I am whole and amazing and feminist and badass as hell. And I also want to find the right romantic partner or partners. And I also am going to figure out how to find them with more joy than misery. I think that that can be a really powerful both-hand approach that is life-changing for so many, and why I'm excited about my book and excited for people to free themselves from the patriarchal conventional norms of being miserable in your dating life and shrinking yourself into oblivion so that you can magically land in a partnership. No, we got to reframe and rewrite all of that shit.
Also, then you're just going to spend your whole marriage shrinking and giving yourself some
putting on makeup in the morning before they wake up, like, you know.
Oh my God, I almost died. Sometimes I have to choose to believe that those are fake because I just have so many thoughts and feelings. People need to read the book. Tell them where they can get the book. It is out this week.
Yeah, the book is out this week. Thank you, More Please, A Feminist Guide to Breaking Dumb Dating Rules and Finding Love. I'm so excited that this book is out. You can buy it anywhere. It's everywhere. And we love a local bookseller. So if you go love on your local bookseller by buying this book, even better. And you can check out datebrazen.com/book for all sorts of bonuses when you order to get you even more juicy results in your love life. And I'm so excited for people to read it. You can also go to the Date Brazen podcast if you're interested in learning more about my approach and diving into the world of Date Brazen and feminist date coaching.
I love it. And if you are now being like, oh, I should go to my local bookseller, but I don't want to run there. Just go to bookshop.org. It's a way to purchase from the indies online. So there's no reason to delay. Go order the book now. First week book sales, big deal.
Huge deal. And I'm so grateful for your support.
Thanks for coming and sharing with us. If you're loving what you're learning on the podcast, you have got to come check out the Feminist Self-Help Society. It's our newly revamped community and classroom where you get individual help to better apply these concepts to your life, along with a library of next level, blow your mind coaching tools and concepts that I just can't fit in a podcast episode. It's also where you can hang out, get coached, and nerd out about all things thought work and feminist mindset with other podcast listeners just like you and me. It's my favorite place on earth, and it will change your life, I guarantee it. Come join us at www.unfuckyourbrain.com/society. I can't wait to see you there.